Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. When I spit bars in a ring,
man, I go hard, last stand, stand. Hey, everyone. Before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So, whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. When I spit bars in a ring,
man, I go hard, last stand, stand. They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
Lampard comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness.
It's a counter-attack. Here's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes! Scores!
Stretch it.
Chelsea 2, Arsenal 0. And Didier Drogba has...
Drogba in the centre!
McCoy just came from the back. He's got it!
Possibly bleak as this. Drogba!
Madness. Never ended up in McDonald's. And I haven't had a trophy in one time. Not the point that I played with McDonald's.
I think Shelley was done, Brian, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's mic is cool. All right. Hello. Welcome to Chezzy Hour. My name is Meads, and I'll be your host for this one. It feels like I've not been on Chezzy Hour for a little minute. I've been mad busy. But yeah, I'm back. But yeah, let's not say that I'm back because of the upturn of form. But yeah, anyway, that's what people try to accuse me of. But yeah, man. Anu, how you doing, bro?
Oh, thank God, man. We thank God.
Villain Anu. If you guys know, if you guys listen to the Discords, if you guys are locked in and tuned in to the extra content we provide, you know that Anu's the villain. He's a villain of the piece against the Liverpool fans. So, yeah. Check out the Discord, man.
He was in trouble, man. That's not going to change.
That's it. Babs, what are you saying, bro? Babs, I think Babs is on mute or he's on feed.
Babs ain't even there.
I think Babs' internet connection. We'll get onto Babs a little bit later on. But, where is Babs? Yeah, I don't know. I think he might have crashed out. Welcome back, Babs.
Yo, what happened?
I don't know, mate. You went on mute and you crashed.
Oh, my God. Sorry about that.
But yeah, Babs, how you doing, man?
Yeah, man, I can't complain, man. Good upturn of form, some good results, I'm happy.
Okay. So it seems like the dynamic duo of the Discord are here. So when it comes to, I guess, our upturn in form, it all seemed a bit doom and gloom after the weekend result against Southampton. It felt like a missed opportunity. And I guess we kind of need to cast our minds back to that game. But I don't really think we've had a chance to really speak about it. A lot happened, even though it was a 1-1 draw. A lot happened in that game. Talk to me about your thoughts on the team, because I know a lot of people said, yeah, I'm quite happy with that. Because it offered up a couple bits of changes. Zuma got his opportunity at the back, in the middle of the back three. Tammy Abraham started, Timo Werner, Mount. I think it was Kovacic and Kante in the midfield. So there was a lot of changes. But how did you guys feel about seeing that team? I guess Anu, first and foremost, how did you feel when you saw the team? And how did you feel in terms of the first half? And we went down to a Minamino goal early doors. But how did you feel that, you know, the game went and how we responded to adversity in those games?
Yeah, well, obviously, the Southampton game was... It was going to be really tricky. And why I say that is because obviously they were coming off, what, a 5-6 game losing streak. So when you catch a team like that, when everyone's going to expect you to win, as we were going into a good form, it could always be a banana peel. And it ended up being that, as we all know. What I remember of the game, and let me start with the lineup. What I remember of the lineup, it just sums up Tuchel, TT, however you want to say it. It just sums it up how he's been. We can't predict any lineup for his first 6 days. We haven't been able to. So it brought up the changes that probably were deserved. I believe Zuma did deserve a start because he hadn't had one in the Prem, which I made clear before. Kante's now coming back from his injury, probably deserved a start as well. And then we hadn't seen Reece James too much of right wing back. So I'm confident with these players. I wasn't worried about that, but obviously it's not the team that's been doing the jobs before. So listen, they came out there first half and again, I just think it's been a story with Lampard and also with Tuchel. We had just haven't been clinical in the final third. We dominated the whole first half as much as I remember. I don't even remember them having a chance until their goal and they ended up scoring. Because we did not take the chances that we had available to us. And I think that's just something I'm sure we'll talk about later. I thought the goals for was Zuma. Whether we can argue that he hasn't been match sharp because he hasn't had games, you could argue that. But I felt that Zuma could have prevented the goal. I felt like he was out of position. But like the gap between him and Azpilicueta was too big. So it's Azpilicueta having to cover around and it was a great finish by Minamino. Sent both of them for a hot dog and it was a goal. We got back into the game by a Mount winning the pen and scoring the pen. Again, it's not great, is it? Do you know what I mean? We've drawn a game against Southampton and we haven't scored an open play and we've only scored by a pen. And obviously the Cho saga, but I think that's been spoken about too much. So I actually don't really want to get too much into that. But I didn't think it was our best games. I thought it was our first, probably.
I think it's important to talk about that Cho situation. Okay. I think it's maybe much has been made of it, and maybe I can understand why. And I think a lot of time has passed since that moment, so I understand. But I feel we do need to, we owe it to our listeners to discuss it,
mm-hmm.
to a smaller degree. But Babs, I guess you got your thoughts on that, I guess, the first half. In fact, because it wasn't really much of a game, like we weren't really creating chances, carving them apart. But how did you feel when you saw the lineup, and how do you feel generally about our approach to the game? Because it did seem very much Tuchel, like, you know.
Well, for the lineup personally, I'm looking at it now and it's a lot of the partnerships there are just partnerships that I'm not really a big fan of. You know, the front three, I didn't really put on much creation there between Mount, Timo and Tammy. So I feel like that was always a recipe for disaster. The midfield two, Kovacic and Kante, they're both two quality players, but in my opinion, I just don't think they make a good pairing. Mm-hmm. But like, we have two players that want to be ball carriers, and I just don't think you can have that without the actual like holding of player. And I feel like it was quite a risky game to like test the hold and trying them two together, because we had something that was tried and tested. And we know that Southampton are a team that like to press, they like to really get into it. So I feel like having a tempo set in Jorginho would have been nice. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of him, but I feel like that was a big loss.
Yeah.
The fullback situation is a bit worrying for me still, because I've never been a big fan of Marcus Alonso, and Didier Peño, like, he was running and ragged, man. Like, you could really, really tell that the pace that he had to offer on that right-hand side, it was going to cause us issues. Reece, I love him as a player, but I've never been the biggest fan of his as a fullback. You know, I don't think he really offers width well naturally. I feel like he can do it, but I just don't feel like that's his game. I feel like his game is where he's able to like invert a bit more in, come a bit more to midfield sometimes. You know, so I just didn't really think that was ever going to work. And with Zuma, last but not least, like, although I did feel like he did deserve his chance, I just don't think he's a good central centre back in that back three. Like, that centre guy, that he has to be like your deep line player. Like, he that guy there, which was basically supposed to be the replacement for Jorginho. And as I said, I'm not the biggest fan, but I feel like having him there, like having a Christensen there to like help with the passing would have helped a lot, because there were times where we were trying to make play happen from Zuma, and it just felt awkward. Like, I feel like he's a quality.
It is interesting, the fact that he opted to go with Zuma in the middle of a back three, particularly when Chris Jensen has shown decent form since replacing Thiago Silva. So I did feel like that sub was that change was a relatively needless change. But then again, you might argue that he had thoughts upon Atletico. And I know Chris Jensen did have a little bit of a knock, so you don't really want to, I guess, risk it. But I agree when it comes to like the centre back pairing or the centre back structure, Zuma being the middle of the back three, I just don't feel comfortable.
Yeah,
because he isn't really good on the ball or comfortable to step out with the ball unless he's at an angle.
We've seen it already, man. Like, he played in the FA Cup final. He didn't look comfortable there. He wasn't really able to help with the play. You know, he got caught out a couple of times. I just don't feel like that central centre-back role suits him. And even going on for the rest of the game, like, I feel like the substitutions were good in the fact that he made him early, relatively early at least anyway, with Cho. I feel like it was harsh to sub him off, but, you know, we're going to get to that a bit more. Jorginho, I feel like he should have brought Jorginho on straight away coming into the second half. Ziyech, man, I've said it before, like, I was a fan of his because I wanted him to, like, offer that different angle on the right hand side as an attacking option, because we have Reece going outside and we have him coming inside. But I just feel like I've just been left disappointed. Like he's very, very one dimensional. He hasn't really been up to the speed of the Prem, and he looks very, very just like laid back. Like, he doesn't really care. You know, I hate using terms like that because it sounds very Yerda, but I just don't think his heart's in it. You know, like, he's coming on, you know, he's strolling about, he's shrugging his shoulders. Man don't really care. You know, he's just here for the shisha. Here for the vibes, you know?
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like probably we'll touch on it during the Atletico section, but I do feel like it's very difficult to come into a high-intensity game like he was asked to. And even with Hudson-Odoi, I don't think the substitutions that Tuchel made were actually particularly good. So not only did I didn't like his starting lineup, but Yeah, the substitutions were a bit fishy.
But what I will say is, the one that I did agree with was the Tammy one, because although Tammy wasn't involved in the game, and I said that in Discord, but what I recognised when I watched the game back was Tammy didn't make himself involved in the game either. He didn't drop in to help him connect play. He didn't really offer that link with the two tens in behind him. And I feel like it's starting to get worrying for Tammy, man, because like the contract still hasn't been signed. You know, the rumours are starting to hit the streets. It's looking scary, man, for him, man.
I mean, with that, yeah. I agree. The Tammy sub, I agreed with. But I don't... Okay, the decision to bring off Tammy, I agreed with. But who he replaced him with, I didn't agree with. I understand the logic, because obviously you feel that Timo Werner's going to have space in behind. But looking at the way Southampton were playing and their setup, they were very, very deep. So there was minimal space for Timo to really operate in. We barely got in behind. So I just never really felt that... in fact, that's a lie. We got in behind often, but the passes were never coming. So Reece James had ample opportunity to thread in Timo Werner. Mason Mount, again, had ample opportunity to thread in Timo Werner. But those situations, it seems like Tuchel keeps alluding to it, where the final pass, the final decision is never being made. It's never quite there. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It must be frustrating for Timo, but Timo works tirelessly. My biggest issue is that I think there's a just in the final third, there's a quality issue.
We need the shooters, man. We need the shooters.
Yeah, and just generally, I feel like it's not even just shooters. I feel like we need creation, and I feel like Ziyech can provide that. It's just that will he bring the intensity that the others bring? So that there's a lot of tinkering around that I think that Tuchel needs to really think about. But yeah, the substitution. So obviously, he brings on Hudson-Odoi at halftime. Hudson comes and gets involved. So already he creates the opportunity for the penalty. Shows a little bit of class and composure, which we were lacking all first half. Picks out Mason Mount. Mason Mount gets fouled by a crazy challenge by Danny Ings. And it's a penalty. Mason Mount steps up, takes it. It's 1-1. And then from then on, we never really kicked on. It never felt like we kicked on. It just felt like we were just going through the motions, really. It weren't good. It weren't good for me. It weren't good to watch at all. And with the Hudson-Odoi getting come, I think he came off after 30 minutes. I don't think he particularly, I think that was wrong. I think it was the wrong decision, because of all players that you look to, Hudson generally is the one that will open up a game. He's generally the one that will create a chance, an opportunity. So I didn't really agree with the sub. In fact, him taking off Hudson, that's his own prerogative. Him making that decision is his own prerogative. But his reasonings didn't really make any sense, because Hudson was pressing high. Hudson was doing his work, doing his what he normally does. That he looked relatively energetic as well. You compare it to the other players as well. Like, relatively, he didn't look really out of sorts. But then... Yeah, I just personally think that he got that sub wrong. I would have brought on Giroud for Tammy, if I'm perfectly honest. Tammy wasn't giving us the presence at all, wasn't giving us a focal point at all. Everything was bouncing off him. And like you said, Babs, it is looking quite worrying for Tammy. And I guess we can discuss that later on as to what we think we should do with the Tammy situation, or what do you think he should do. But it was a bit of a poor bit of... something you don't really associate with Tuchel, but it's tactical decision-making or in-game decision-making was quite poor. Anu, what did you think of his, I guess, the adjustments that he made in the game? Because I couldn't help but feel like he missed a trick on a number of decisions.
Yeah, and obviously hindsight's a fantastic thing. I've seen some of the post-match interviews from him in the future, and he's made it clear that, look, these decisions were wrong. And I think that echoes what we're saying. I think the subs were wrong. They didn't change the game as what was needed. I believe his thinking behind it was, Tammy didn't get himself into the game. There's opportunities to play behind these guys. We need to move the ball quicker. So I think he wanted to bring more pace on top at the top end of the pitch. Mm. Hence why he wanted to bring Werner and Tammy to play like these two strikers off each other and make the runs in behind. But it didn't, I mean, Cho and Werner, but it didn't work. Now, because it didn't work, this is what resulted in this Cho sub. And I voiced my discontent about it straight away after the game and my confusion with it, because it was pure confusion. It didn't make any sense to me as to why you, even if you made the wrong subs and even in the wrong positions, why you couldn't possibly address that during the game. We've seen Tuchel before pull the players aside, communicate with them, and let them know what they're going wrong. But I didn't see a sense of that throughout the game. I just saw him venting his anger more at himself and more just stressing, but however, not actually communicate with the players. I thought that was important. Like, if Cho was doing something so wrong, how about you pull him aside? There are going to be multiple times within that game where the game would have stopped play and you could easily have spoken to him. In addition to that, he's on your side of the pitch, which you made it clear was that maybe that was the reason why you're harsh, but then that's also an advantage to communicate with him. I don't feel that's any communications. Look, Jamie Carragher made it clear when he did the analysis on whatever, and he said, if you're going to call him out for the counter-pressing, but then he's going to have completed the second most sprints in the team, that's contradictory to what you said. So I think it was clear Tuchel made a mistake, and he's made a mistake with the subs. Giroud should have played, in my opinion, because Giroud is the kind of player who can do nothing for a half and then bang a goal. I don't get that same vibe with Tammy. So I feel like that game was calling out for just a bit of a wonder strike again, and us to just go away with 2-1 and just say we played shit and then move on. But that didn't happen. And I think Tuchel made it clear. I think it was his first mistake in management within us, but he's going to make a lot more. And he owned up to it. So that's why I can be okay. Do you know what I mean? I'm fine knowing that he's held his hands up and said, look, it was wrong. And I think that's it, really.
Yeah, it's a refreshing experience. You know what I mean? Like, for so long, we've had managers where they almost become devoid of responsibility when it comes to failings in a match. And there's failings that everyone could see. I feel like after the game, pretty much I said, I didn't like that decisions. I didn't like anything that he did. I think he got most of it wrong. And it takes a manager confident within himself and confident within his ideals to actually own up and say, you know what? I messed up. And, you know, he said that after the Atletico game that he wasn't happy, he wasn't pleased with his decision-making. And he was honest. Even with the Hudson-Odoi thing, he was honest and said, look, I might have been really harsh because he was right in front of me, but he'll have to watch it back again. So that air of refreshing honesty is something that won't go amiss for me. It's something that I've always wanted in a manager. So I definitely hear you, Anu. I definitely hear you.
And just to add on that point, which I made clear on Twitter as well, it's a scary precedent to set, because what he's doing by that, and maybe his apology kind of backs him up now, but what you're doing by that, you're trying to say now, if I see anyone else play poor for 25 minutes, are you pulling them? Because you now have to make that your baseline. And there are going to be players you're going to bring on at half time, and they're going to not counter press. There's going to be an opportunity that's going to happen. So if you don't pull them, what are you saying? Now it's like, oh, you did it for him. So it's just a scary precedent to set, and you have to just make sure. Listen, it's a quality here, and we know Cho's been hard done by before, and it's like you're going to pick that same player again and show this to be the example. So listen. It's worrying, but as I said, I think his apology backs him up there, and I think that Bav, you want to say something on this, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like not only was the sub a bit harsh, but I feel like he kind of recognized the mistake he made in himself in terms of doing the split strikers thing again, because personally, I'm not a fan of it. You know, having a mount and dropping in between. I've been playing Werner and Odoi as split strikers because we did it against Tottenham. And personally, I wasn't really a fan. I didn't really think it was that effective. And I feel like when he did it here again today, I just felt like it was a bit disjointed at times, whereby like you have Mount drifting off a bit towards to the right with Cho and I'm just not a fan of Cho and Reece in the same side because I feel like they're trying to do the same thing. I just don't think it works too well.
I think in certain games, in certain games it makes sense. Now, I don't think in this 3-4-3, I don't like it. I agree. I don't really like Hudson being on the same side as Reece James. That's not because they can't connect, because they obviously can. But I feel like there needs to be a degree of different angles that I don't think that they do. Cho comes inside, but he tends to create angles for people to come in on the overlap. Reece doesn't really do that often enough. He doesn't make that overlapping run often enough. For me personally, I don't like, I understand why you don't like it, but I saw why he went for it because of the pace in transition. You know what I mean? I get it. I do get it.
If I hop in real quick, I feel like I see similar parallels to what Arteta was going through with Saka and Tierney on that side at Arsenal. But like, I feel like it was sometimes counterproductive. Like even if you watch like a Bayern Munich, they moved Sane back over to his favorite right wing over and play him on the left, because I just feel like having those two players that will do the exact same thing, which is hit the byline, I just feel like it's very, very counterproductive in the way that we should be looking to play. You know, yeah. I feel like it's a bit reminiscent of old times, so to say.
Yeah. So what would you say? Would you play Hudson-Odoi in the left wing position?
Yeah, 100%.
And move Timo up front or move Timo aside?
Personally, I'd probably play Giroud up top, Hudson on the left, and probably Mount on the right.
Yeah, because I think it'd be very harsh to drop Mount. I think Mount's been one of our best players under Tuchel, obviously after Hudson-Odoi and Kovacic. So I think Mount really pretty much should get in. Mm. But speaking about contrasting performances, well, not really contrasting, because once again we had control of the game, but a fantastic away win in the Champions League against Atletico Madrid, a team that some might have thought they were the favourites to lift the trophy come the end of the season. But, that was a comprehensive win for me. I feel that was comfortable from start to finish. Now, there was obviously moments of nerves with Edouard Mendy. He looked a bit shaky. He was first time at this level, obviously. He looked a bit nervous. But Azpilicueta, of course, I think he was really, really poor. And I didn't really think Jorginho and Kovacic played too well. But despite all of that, we looked unbelievably comfortable. I don't recall Atletico creating much. I don't recall them having a real shot at goal that made me really nervous. It was a very interesting game. So let's start with you, Babs, because you were super concerned. I mean, you were very, very nervous before the game. And he was shook. He was shook.
The boys, yeah.
And I was thinking, what's going on here? Because I didn't understand why the fear. So could you, in fact, Babs, can you tell me why you were so fearful of Atletico Madrid?
And what were your predictions? I don't know them, to be fair. And I can't even remember you saying them. But what did you predict?
I can't lie, man. I was struggling through some PLSD, fam. Post-Lampard stress disorder. I can't lie. I was worried because I felt like whenever I watched Atletico Madrid this season, one of the most common things I've recognised is their overlying power in their midfield and just like wide positions. And I felt, knowing that Alonso was going to be playing, having a Marcus Llorente going up against him, I just felt that was going to be a recipe for disaster. You know, like I've always had worries about Christensen and Rudiger, and like knowing that the kind of striker that Suarez is, his spatial awareness, the fact that he always somehow like gets to bounce the ball, I feel like that was just a recipe for disaster with those two, and I just wasn't confident. You know, even with like the front line, you know, like I was scared because opening in the first half of the game, like, I didn't think Mount was amazing. I feel like he was good in all his overall pieces of play as per usual, but like the final pass at times was a bit lacking.
Seems to be a bit of an issue for Mason Mount, if I'm honest.
It's an issue.
But then again, I always think he's still only 21, 22. So
yes, still young guy.
You know, that element of his game can develop, but what it is becoming a bit of a problem for me, because there have been ample opportunities to release players and he makes the wrong decision. But I can't take away from this before. I thought it was really good, despite the fact he was got a yellow card, really, really a harsh yellow card, really, really
very early on as well.
That put him out of the second leg. I feel like he performed relatively well. I did get a lot of nightmare moments where I felt like he was going to clatter into somebody, like just because of high energy play. But I felt like he had a.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Really good game. I think we had a really good game.
One thing I have to definitely say is the second half was very, very mature. He was very reserved in his tackling and his pressing, but he still was effective. He didn't go flying into any shackles, and it felt like a very mature, like above his age kind of performance. And I feel like that's just the best way to sum up that performance. You know, we didn't really have to do anything too crazy, comfortable. Jorginho in the first half was worrying because like there were moments where like we had Cho like making darting runs, like just stretching play, and he just was not finding him. Oh. And I watched it back because I remember in the group chat you said it 8 times, and I looked, and I was just looking at it, like every single time Cho made a run to stretch play.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
I'll jump in on that. A lot of the times, and I said this on Discord as well, I think they saw it. I'm not even going to say they didn't see it. Mm. They saw it, but they didn't back themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of the time in this game, all the centre mids, actually all the midfield, and the two centre mids and Aspie did not have their balls throughout the game. They could not find it. Because a lot of the times they'll see it, but then turn inside and then not play the ball. Cho made these darting runs, but multiple times. Aspie's was even worse because Aspie, maybe he needed physio or something. The guy was so stiff. But he would get the ball and he would not look over his shoulder because he would get it from the centre mid. He's playing right centre back, isn't he? So the ball would typically come from Jorginho or Kovacic from the left-hand side. He would get it, and he would not even try to look over the right-hand side where Cho was. I don't know if Cho's not shouting. I don't know if he's not screaming. I would think that's not true, but you know he's there anyway. Have some positional awareness of the pitch.
It was really bad.
Telling game from Aspie in terms of, like, showed his age, and he really stood out as being poor, I thought, that game. And I just feel like
my overwhelming feeling in particularly in the first half was just cowardice. I saw cowardly play from Jorginho all the time, cowardly play from Kovacic all the time, cowardly play from Aspie all the time. Alonso, I mean, he was relatively sloppy, but you get that with Alonso. It's something that you get with him. Obviously, I don't want him to play. I don't want him to start for Chelsea, but it's something that you get. You're going to get a degree of sloppiness from him in general and just like carelessness. But those Jorginho, Kovacic and and Aspi. I think Kovacic more so disappointed me the most because I felt he turned over a new leaf under Tuchel. But maybe his job wasn't necessarily to be trying those dangerous cutting passes. But I think he did that more so in the second half. But first half, it's just he was shying away. He was doing these 1-2 yard passes again that you see between him and Jorginho. That makes me sick because it goes nowhere. What are you doing? Like, well, you're not even opening up angles for nobody. It's just pointless. Jorginho just kept shying away from that pass to Hudson all the time. Hudson made about, like, I remember in the first 15-20 minutes, Hudson made at least 4 darts. Was going on unmuted. Like, it was going unlocked, like, unchecked. Every single time, it was just perfect. It was perfect for me. But at the same time, like I said, you look at the result and you look at the performance. Atletico didn't really have any threats. They tried to break on us in transition, but we managed them perfectly. I don't know, man. I wasn't worried at all. I think usually before Champions League games, when you have what concerns me in I guess the Champions League games is the uncertainty of how our team's going to turn up. But because I've seen how Tuchel lines up, I've seen how, you know, we've performed over the last 6 or 7 games, I thought to myself, yeah, I'm quite comfortable with this. I'm comfortable. I've been watching Letty for the last couple of weeks as well. And I just had a feeling that, yeah, we'll be all right. We'll be all right, man, because...
I hate that.
What was that?
Yeah, sorry. I will say, though, they did make it very easy. It's a weird one. They did make it very easy for us in the fact that this team did just sit back and not even attempt to play this game.
That was a point, that's why I wasn't concerned.
That it showed 8 players were lined up at the back. It wasn't even a back 6, it was like a back 8. So these guys, they didn't put pressure on us, and it's poor. It was really poor from them. And I think it's a testament to how poor La Liga is right now. I think.
But that's why I wasn't concerned in the first place. Yeah. That's why I wasn't concerned in the first place. Yeah. I knew exactly how they set up.
Not serious.
I knew how they set up. I knew how they play. I said that they're only going to have one counter threat, which is João Felix. And honestly, I wasn't really concerned.
Brother Meads, could you repeat that name again, please?
Oh, João Felix, the one that...
Oh, I didn't see him. Is that another youngster that failed the Mason Mount test? Is that what you're telling me, bro?
Mason Mount has put too many of these YGs in a spliff. I'm sorry. He put too many of these YGs in a spliff. These so-called next best player in the world. He's put too many of them in a spliff. I think all that's left is Mbappe and Erling Haaland. I think the rest... If you fail the Mason Mount test, yeah, and he outperforms you on a pitch where you have been supposedly told to be one of the best up-and-coming things, then boy, you know, we don't rate Mason like that. We think Mason's a good player. We don't think he's one of the world's best, but I'm saying, if you're failing to outshine Mason, then boy, you might need to dial it down a little bit. Those ratings might need to be dialed down a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
The only thing he tried to do was that bicycle kick.
Yeah.
Jude was like, hold my beer, bruv.
Someone basically just said, you know what? Yeah, I see your little cute attempt. It was all right. But, you know, you ballooned it like 50 yards over the bar. And Giroud did what Giroud does. And I've always said, like, obviously Giroud, for me, has gone up in my estimation at Chelsea for sure. But if there's one thing about Giroud that's crazy, is his catalogue of goals. If you look at the guy's goals and the style, type of goals that he scored, you'd think that this guy's an absolute madman. Like, if in 50 years you go back and look at Giroud's goals, you would have been thinking this guy's one of the most elite strikers in world football because the quality of his goals, unbelievable. So obviously he's got, 6 in 6 games in the Champions League this season.
Second top scorer, I believe.
Second top goal scorer in the CL at the minute. I'm 2 behind Erling Haaland. But sometimes he frustrates. Giroud does frustrate, and sometimes he's not really involved in the game. But when you've got the quality to do that, and it's almost ridiculous that we're talking about Giroud at 34 years of age, but he looks like he's our best striker. And obviously, the jury's still out on Timo Werner. But yeah, Oli Giroud, man, I think he's held himself so well, like as a pro, like. he's proper conducted himself in a good manner, even despite the fact that he wasn't playing. I think he deserves tremendous credit, man, because he's done an amazing job at Chelsea, and I think it's hard to. It'd be a good situation if we kept him on, because he seems like he's a guy that kind of understands his position, but also is going to fight for the club. So what were you guys' thoughts on not just the goal, but Giroud in general?
Man, I've got to say that he's edging slowly but surely into that excellent servant for the club kind of role. You know, like he's always been there as a backup when you need him. He's always been dependable. From his goal against, I'll never forget his goal against Southampton in the FA Cup. Amazing goal. You know, his goal in the Europa against his ex-team to put them in a spliff. Amazing. And I just feel like there's a real connection that he has to the club now, because he was well within his rights to leave last January.
Yeah.
You know, he was well within the rights, but he said, you know what, I'm gonna stick around, I'm gonna help the guys get top four, and he did it. And let's just hope that he can go on to do some more stuff this season, you know, because we're still in the FA Cup. We're still in the Champions League, so you know, maybe he could add some extra silverware.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, look, the last time, in fact, that we went through a group stage undefeated, we won the Champions League. I mean, I'm not saying that it's possible. I'm not saying that we're going to do it, but I'm just saying that, don't forget, football's a funny old game. And obviously, we've had a change of manager during the season, who for me is better than the last by a million miles. So I think the possible's there, bro. The possibilities are there. I mean, I don't really look at anyone in the Champions League bar Bayern that really scares me. PSG, yeah.
Like Bayern and PSG, I can't lie, because of that Mbappe threat, I feel like that's a massive threat. I'm not sure if we're ready for that yet.
When you've got star quality like that, yeah, no problem. But
other than that,
yeah, who else are you looking at? Man City, of course.
Yeah, Man City. Liverpool?
I don't know. We're going to play Liverpool in a couple of weeks. So we'll see what that's going to be the acid test. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one, man. But I guess an impressive win. I think that one, again, we didn't play particularly well, but we still controlled and dominated the game. Jorginho wasn't good. Aspi wasn't good.
Remember, it's an away win, though.
An away 1-0. It's just like thinking about it. Put that all into context. It's a great result. A great result. And I don't think anyone can really complain. But now the focus shifts again back to the Premier League. Boy, big game this weekend against Manchester United. Our ops. You know, the ones that stay posted a lot on our lives, on the Discord. Mariah, we're coming for you, bro. But it's a sticky one. It's a big game. And I don't remember the feeling to beat Manchester United in the league game. It's been a little minute, man. So how are you guys setting up for that game?
I think first of all, Tuchel's passed that first test. That was our first big test at Atletico. So automatically, I have faith, man. I think Giroud has to start. I think we set up... I've always said this. I'd prefer Chilwell on the left wing back. And then keep the back three as it was. If Thiago Silva's fit, I would like Thiago Silva in the middle of the back three. On either side, Rudy and Aspi, even though Aspi had a poor game, but Rudy and Aspi, I like Cho wing back. I know a few of you guys have been against that or seen better, but I think he's been superb there. I think it simplifies his game, gives him less things to maybe think about and more to just specialise in terms of touch that touch line and then just beat the man and get that ball in. Do you know what I mean? And I feel he's so good at that. His post moves are so superb at that. If he needs to cut in, he can. And play the 1-2s with Mount. He has that connection. And then I think we keep it Jorginho and Kante. Even though I think they had a poor game, I think they've had a good Premier League season under Tuchel. So I don't see why that needs to be changed now.
You mean Jorginho and Kovacic?
I think so, yeah. And the reason I'm saying that, I'm just basing it on their Premier League game so far.
I think they've been good. You said Jorginho and Kante. That's why I was like, oh, do you mean Jorginho?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Let's go Jorginho cover. Sorry, forgive me. I think I would love... I'm a Kante fan, but I just think let's just give them the start just because how good they've been in the Prem. And then up top, yeah, I said Giroud already. And then Mount and... It's a tough one here. I say we keep it Mount, and I would love to see Havertz. I would love to see him, but I don't think we're going to. I don't think we're going to, sadly.
I think Havertz, it might be a game too soon, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a big game to throw him into. I think Havertz was probably going to start in the second leg against Atletico because you've got a lot of suspension.
And he played well. We didn't mention that. I felt he played well. I felt he gave us those killer balls that the other players couldn't do. But yeah. I think in the term games, it won't be as easy. It'll be more under high pressure. So I think Manu aren't looking that great now. They're not. And we look so compact at the back. I think these guys, they're not firing. They just drew 0-0 against Real Sociedad. Yeah, man, their second team. But listen, we can do it. Forms are up. Drew can bang a goal whenever he wants. And we just got to hope that we keep it tight at the back.
Yeah. We'll see. What do you think, Babs?
Personally, I think this is kind of game where you've got to throw a spanner in the works. Because I know Ollie, and I know he watches us sometimes and he tries to match the three at the back. So I'm not saying change it, but I'm saying maybe avoid playing Chua right wing back simply because Luke Shaw this season has been amazing. Him and Rashford on the left, I think that's going to be a bit too much for Cho to deal with defensively. And if you want to enjoy Cho's attacking output, I feel like it's a bit too risky in terms of penning him back to play him there. So what I'd do is I'd go Mendy in goal. I'd have Rudiger, unfortunately, at left centre-back. Thiago, if he's fit, in the middle. And then I'd have to play Aspi at right centre-back. But then I'd have to go with Reece, right wing-back. Left wing-back, it's a tough one because at this position, I'd love to say Chilwell, but if I'm being totally honest, I just know that Alonso's going to be playing. You know, it seems as though we were calling him Cho Tuchel's boy, but it looks like Alonso's Tuchel's boy as well. So yeah. It may just be Alonso there. And if we're in the midfield too, I don't feel like this is the kind of game for Jorginho, you know? Because I know that United are like, I don't really rate their midfield, but I feel like if we want to, we could risk it and go on Mount and Kante, but I don't see that happening. So what I want to see would be a Mount and Kante, but what I think will happen is a Kovar and Jorginho, you know? So I'm going to go reverse.
Like a Mount and Kante back there.
Yeah, because what we have to acknowledge with United is they have like a very, very high tempo midfield. Like they're very, very energetic. You know, Bruno loves to run around, Fred loves to run around and kick shins. And I feel like that's the kind of game where Jorginho sometimes gets a bit run over.
Yeah.
Behind the strikers, behind Giroud, because he's a striker right now. You know, he's the captain of this ship. Behind Giroud, I'd go Cho on the left, and I'd risk it and play Ziyech on the right. And I feel that's going to be a very, very weird shot considering what I've said about Ziyech. But I feel like when Ziyech came in against Atletico Madrid, although he wasn't amazing, I did feel like he offered a bit more in terms of going forward with like the through balls. He popped over to Timo for his 1v1. You know, he was looking a bit more confident. He was looking a bit more hungry.
He looked a bit more like himself.
And he was taking loads of risks. Yeah. And I feel like this is the kind of game where being 6 points behind United, we need to cut the gap down. To create these chances, I feel like Ziyech is going to be pivotal.
Yeah,
the problem is, I'm sorry, I forgot to add my player I would have behind Drew, next to Mount and behind Drew would be Werner. And hopefully he just finds his shooting boots. But
my thing with Werner is like.
So you're saying you're not playing him?
Yeah, right? I'm not playing him. Because my thing with Werner is against a Wan-Bissaka, I don't think he's going to have much joy.
He won't be out there. Well, I don't think he'll be out there that much, though. So. Surely that would be
different. I don't know, because I saw the heat map, you know, like it's not too different from under Lampard. So, like, I do feel if we want someone to play from the left and create chances from the left, I feel like that would be a lot better off with having Schroeder. So as I said earlier with the midfield, if Mount wasn't to play midfield too, I'd have to play him and Mount because I feel like him and Mount have always had an excellent connection from the academy days. And we've seen that at a senior level, like they're very, very well connected in terms of like their play. And I feel like they actually are very, very good too going forward. You know, Mount's very high octane. We're going to need that energy to press for United because Maguire's very, very... He's there to be got on that, you know? And I feel like having a Mount there, he may be the one. But if Mount's not playing the midfield too, I'm going to have to play Mount over Ziyech.
Okay.
I think Mount's got to be there, to be honest. I think I don't think we're going to see that change in terms of to the playing there. But yeah, you're right. It does scare me. I know my selection. I did say Jorginho Kovacic just because of the on merit in the Prem, but it does scare me in the pace and the intensity that I bring. Kante probably could be a lot better, but it's been working.
I feel like I definitely would play three at the back.
He's not changing that.
I definitely understand. I understand Babs's view about Reece James. And whilst you may lose a lot in terms of offensive prowess, but defensively, you're going to get a lot. So I definitely agree. I'd probably say Babs's team, I agree with, obviously not Mason Mount in midfield. I'd probably have him behind the striker. But yeah. What, give me 1 second, boys. Let me just pause this. Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to the United team, I do agree that Ollie's probably going to try and match us and probably play 5-3-2. But because they've got no Pogba, I'm slightly more confident that we'll win that midfield battle. It's just, and we're at home, right?
Yeah, we're at home, yeah. So, yeah, right, Pogba's out, McTominay's out, and Van der Beek is out.
Yeah, so I'd be very disappointed if we don't win the game.
Mm.
To be honest. I'd be very, very disappointed. But, you know, it's the Premier League. Anything can happen. So it's just one of them things. I feel like it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough, tough game because they're not going to give us any space to operate. That's why I think Giroud has to start, to be honest. And Giroud, I back Giroud to get his... You know, physically dominate
Maguire. That match against Maguire, yep. We're going to be key, man.
Yeah, so it's a mad one. And obviously, we've got a tough set of fixtures after this. You know what I mean? So, yeah, after this game, I think we've got... Well, have we got Liverpool? We've got Liverpool. Liverpool, then Everton. We've got
Leeds.
Liverpool. Okay, so our next round of fixtures are obviously Manchester United this Sunday. And we've got Liverpool on the Thursday next week.
Yep.
And then we've got Everton on the Monday, and then we've got Leeds, and then we've got Atletico again for the second leg. So big, big, big four games ahead of us. And then obviously you've got the big fifth game against Atletico. So it's looking crazy. It's looking very, very crazy. And it doesn't stop from there. So in terms of getting that top four, these next four games are critical. Pivotal.
Yeah,
absolutely critical because obviously we're 3 points ahead of Liverpool. So if we beat United, then beat Liverpool, that's 6 points. You know what I mean? At the very least, we're above Liverpool, and that kind of gives us a nice little buffer going up into the next run of fixtures. And you've got Everton, who are in and around the top four battle. You've got Leeds, who are in very, very good form actually.
Yeah, yeah, they're the mid-table now. Yeah,
very strong at home. So it's looking very, very sticky, man. Very, very sticky. We're going to need to manage this situation very, very well. But I trust Tuchel to kind of navigate that. But yeah, Babs, I guess we're doing the pre-match clash between the Mugga Mafia.
Yeah.
Talk to us about it.
Yeah, so lads, I know this is a podcast tonight, but if you want that extra content, head over to the Touchline Fracas on YouTube page at 8 p.m. We're going to be getting into the game. We're going to be getting into where the main's going to be lost and won. You know, the key battles, the key players, the opposition players we feel are underrated and overrated. And one of the most important things in my eyes is the combined 11. Combined 11 is what we're going to try and win. You know, we're going to try and get our boys repping us.
So, this guy said, try. You have to.
Yeah. Don't worry, man. You can trust me, man. You can trust me. So 8 p.m., the Touchline Frackers YouTube page. Head on there, subscribe. And we'll see you there.
So I guess we can now move on to some listeners' questions. Babs, I think you've got the list, bro.
So again, you know, shout out to the Discord community. It's bubbling. We've got 1,400 people in there. You know, it's popping. You know, the spaces. Yeah, man, the spaces for football, you know, basketball, NFL, any sport, man. Even e-frackers, you know, are e-gaming. You know, the head over there. There's definitely someone for you there. Like, if you want to get some bows in on your opponents, head on down, man. But yeah, getting into listeners' questions. So, first one from Brother TK. he wants to find out our thoughts on the news around Tammy. So recently there's been some reports coming out that Tammy is not actually interested in re-signing a contract with the potential of a certain striker, you know, being interested.
Let's not talk too much.
Let's focus on the question about Brother Mees. What do you think about the news surrounding Tammy?
I kind of sent out a tweet about this morning. Obviously, Tammy, I don't think Tammy's going to sign a new deal, and I wouldn't blame him, to be honest. Obviously, if you're looking at Chelsea looking to get Haaland, we've already got Timo Werner, and you probably would assume that Olivier Giroud is a bit ahead of him in now on the pecking order. He's got a year and a bit left in his deal. Yeah, I understand. And I think, honestly, it's better for him to move away from Chelsea, get his stock up, learn his trade, because there's still so much to learn from him. I think he's still such a raw player. He's still such a raw player. And I feel like he needs time away from the club to develop. He's still, only 22, 23? I think his time maybe at Chelsea may come, or maybe not. But I just feel like for him, for his sake, and probably for the better of Chelsea, he needs to move on. Because obviously, if you get Haaland, if you've got an opportunity to sign Haaland, who's one of the best strikers in world football, let alone his age, you take it.
I think that's a very eloquent answer, as per usual, from you, Mees. But I've got to ask you a subsequent question.
Go on.
So, could you consider his age and his profile, his record of goals, what do you think would be the fee that we could accumulate for Tammy Abraham?
Ooh, so English striker, so you're going to get English tax. He scores enough goals to get an added top up on that. 23, England international. I mean, how much did Dominic Solanke go for? 20
mil, yeah, 20 mil. Yeah, Brewster for 25.
Brewster, 25. Who else is quite expensive? Yeah, I'd probably say you're about 40 mil. Especially he's on the final year of his deal as well, about 40 mil, 35 to 40 mil.
Yeah, 35 to 40 mil.
Obviously, if he had longer term on his contract, it'd probably be way more. But yeah, 35, 40 mil. I don't think that's beyond Chelsea, especially we're good at extracting fees from people, from that, you know what I mean? So 35, 40, I think they could do it.
Definitely. Brother Ali, what do you think about the news? How are you feeling?
He's not seeing that pitch every game. Player his age, hitting his peak. He's probably seeing his age mates doing better, and you want to be starting for a team. But I sadly don't think it's going to be at Chelsea. I think obviously it'll be a hard decision for him. We know he's a Cobham boy. We know he loves the club, but I think ultimately he's got to think about his own future, and he's got to think about whether he wants to continue being backup. And if this new striker does come in, that's backup. Or do you kind of want to just try and give it a go, probably at either internationally in Europe, etc., or at a lower end Premier League team where you probably could excel? I just don't think Tammy is sadly that level of top four, top six. And it's no disrespect, like that's the elite. He just isn't there yet. Mm. With that change, I don't know. Time will tell. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. He's got to look out for himself, and hopefully both parties can work it out. Good, a lovely succulent transfer fee, and we get the ball rolling.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Well, personally, you know what? I feel like I've got to respect him highly, because I feel like he's done the smart option in terms of not re-signing the contract. You know, first of all, when he came back the season under Lampard, he didn't re-sign the contract. You know, Timo came in again, he didn't resign a contract. You know, he's actually, what he's done is he's held his value in his own hands, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to compare it to other players who have signed contracts, but I feel like by not signing it, he's had that power move whereby he can say, like, you've got to play me, otherwise I'm out the door, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've got to respect that, you know. I don't feel like he's the level yet to be a top four striker, a top six striker, even a top eight maybe, but I do feel like if he is to fill out a bit more, you know, learn the game, I feel like he could get there maybe one day, but I feel like to do that, he needs to be the starting striker somewhere else. So
maybe his age is hush puppy or something. Oh, this.
I do feel like with Tammy, I feel like in order for him to improve, he needs games. Definitely. And I don't feel like he's going to get the adequate level of games to improve enough at Chelsea, especially when Chelsea are trying to be fighting for titles.
Exactly.
I don't think he's at that level. So
there's no time for
him. Yeah, so there needs to be a I guess he needs to move on, apply his trade, improve himself, and obviously if he's to return to that level, it's to return to that level. Say for example, like follow a Romelu Lukaku's kind of journey, for example, where he went down to Everton, played well, moved on to Manchester United, didn't play too well, moved to Inter Milan on the international stage, and now he's looking at one of the finest strikers in Europe. So it's all about the decision maker now. I feel like he's kind of planning things relatively well, and I definitely agree that he's taking a smart approach to this transfer or his contract situation. So yeah, so it's an interesting one. But yeah, I hope that kind of answers the question anyway.
Yeah, I feel like we covered that section very, very well. And the next question, one of my favorite questions personally is which star boy is next in line to be humbled by Monny Mace? I'll leave that up to the floor.
Depends on who we draw, man. But you need to bring up.
I don't think a draw matters because Sunday's around the corner, and you know there's another perceived star boy local.
Boy, that other Mason's struggling quite an awful bit this season. So we ain't gonna talk too much about him. But boy, Mason Mount, to be funny enough, when he comes up against these teams or comes up against these other players that are held in high esteem, he doesn't really look out of place, to be honest. He doesn't look out of place and doesn't look out of sorts. So we have to wait and see, man. We have to wait and see. It's going to be an interesting game, bro. It's going to be an interesting game. And I'd probably bet on group like Mason Mount to have a bigger impact than Greenwood, but you never know. Greenwood has got that hammer left foot, that hammer right foot. So the potential's there to cause havoc. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Last but not least, the last question is from Rohan from Twitter. He asks, why is Tuchel constantly playing Alonso 90 minutes game in, game out? When he doesn't score, he's our worst player on the pitch. Wow. And all our attackers down the left break down at his feet.
Well, that question... Brother
Anu.
Yeah, well, he scored in his first game. So... it kind of eliminates that part of the question. But I think it's clear he just trusts him in that position. And he's given Chilwell starts a left wing back, and Chilwell sadly hasn't taken them. When Chilwell played, he got pulled a couple of times. He didn't play that good. I think it's just a case of Alonso is a specialist left wing back. There's no other discussion points. He's a specialist left wing back. But obviously the scary factor of it is that the guy can't move. The guy's rotation pace or rotation speed is terrible. And he always finds himself inside the box or at the right wing, and then they will have the ball. And it's like, well, how did you get there? So his positional, he gets excited, we know, but you also got to think about what he can do with the other side. He's a tall player. Tuchel's made it clear that he loves him in the air, that he's more of an aerial threat offensively and defensively, and he's probably one of our best strikers of the ball in the weirdest way. He can strike a ball and get a goal from out of nowhere. I guess it's just a case where it's just player trust here. I think there's no two ways about it. Until we see a huge error from Alonso, I think he's going to be starting left wing back for the foreseeable future. I hope that huge error isn't sooner rather than later, but that's it there.
Brother Mies, what do you think?
No, I agree. I think it's just that he just favours him over Chilwell at the minute, and Chilwell hasn't really been pulling up trees since he's been here. I mean, he had a first month or so, he looked really decent, but beyond that, I feel like Alonso's probably your only stable choice. Emerson's good, he's all right. But Emerson going forward isn't as productive. Although he looks better and is a lot technically better, I feel like Alonso gives you that goal threat. But then defensively, he's probably a suspect. A slightly better defensively than Alonso, but I don't think he gives you the upside as well. It makes sense. I feel like, you know, unfortunately for Chilwell, he's going to have to prove himself all over again, you know, whereas he had a big backer in Lampard before. But I
would like to add, I do think it's slightly harsh on Chilwa, and I think that in the long term, Chilwa will be a better player there. Chilwa hasn't played left wing back in his career. I don't think he played it at Leicester. I don't think he's played it before. So you're bringing a new position. You're basically teaching someone a new position. It's going to take time for him to get better at it. So I think it's also harsh with judging Chilwell so quickly in a new position. And I do feel over the time, and I believe Tuchel is so good when it comes to personal management. I get that impression anyway. I should have communicated to him probably a case of, look, learn from Alonso now, see what he's doing. So when it's your time, you're going to come in there. Because there's no way he can see Alonso as a long-term left wing back for this team. There's no way. So I do think it's a temporary fix. And I do think when Chilwell maybe gets his head around it, learns, maybe he's seen some, maybe in training, he's not cut doing the basic things that Tuchel requires. I do think it will change. And I do think Chilwell will be our main left wing back or left back.
We're going to leave it there. Thank you guys for joining me on this one. We'll be back next week. I think after the Liverpool game, really. So we could be off of two big wins. And by the time
that... Or two big losses, you never know.
Why are you going to say that, bro? This guy...
Hey, you just got to keep it real, man. You never know, man.
We'll have to see. But no, I appreciate you guys for joining me. Take it easy, everyone.
Love. Yeah.
Peace.
The greatest minds in the history of Chelsea Football Club, European champions. They've beaten Bayern in their own backyard. They've found the Holy Grail after a venture fraught with danger. And Drogba may never play for Chelsea again. He will never be forgotten. He's in.
Just came back. Hazard. Trying to find a way through. From Eden Hazard!
He may just...
Brilliant run by Hazard! Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal!
That's more like Kante. They do threads on Twitter and ranting. Doing the most. True say that money is power, so when you get money, keep quiet and ghost. Ghost. I remember when I shot my shot, but I didn't have guap, so I hit the post. But next time, it's a golden goal. And it...
Sports Social Podcast Network.